there's a lot of us in the atheism movement who take pride in being right, in having data, in understanding what's going on. I'm not among them. I think partly because while by intellect and by hope, I'm an optimist, but by nature, I'm a pessimist. And sometimes I think bad things are going to happen. And a lot of the time, I think bad things are going to happen. And this is one of those weeks. And I feel terrible. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining me today is Becky. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
So by now, I'm certain you know the details of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Chapel Hill. Three students were killed in their apartment, three Muslim kids, by a guy liked carrying a gun, a bit unhinged, and an atheist in exactly the same model that we are, to be honest with you. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to, you know, turn my back on this. This goes, when it happened, when I heard about this, and if this is news to you, you know, check out the news, you know, pull it up on your phone or a web page while you're listening to this. I was woken up by Becky, since I've been working evenings this week. And what did you say to me?
I said, hi, good morning. It happened. That thing that you always talk about on the show.
Here we are. And I've been making a lot of hay on the show lately about interfacing with Muslims and Christians in order to face the more extreme elements in their own societies, in their own cultures, in their own groups, to be able to say that, yes, they are Christians. Yes, they are Muslims, but they're not people I agree with. And they're not somebody who should be allowed at the place at the table because they think violence is a way to solve something. And here I am, two or three weeks later, with this situation. And it's a difficult one for me to approach. We got some emails on it, even. Thomas from the U.S. writes, is this the one you've been predicting, or just a neighborly dispute gone horribly wrong? And perhaps more importantly in the long run, does it matter in the court of public opinion whether or not this was actually a hate crime? That's an interesting one, because what we know, one of the details that we know today is the guy who did the killing, Craig Hicks. This was apparently over a parking dispute. Can you fill that in a little bit?
Yeah. What's coming to light and what's being investigated right now is allegedly this particular man had a lot of disputes over parking spaces.
Yeah.
And had disputes with these individuals in the past. I had seen interviews with his wife saying the fact that he killed these people had nothing to do with... Well, I'm not sure that his wife actually said that he killed these people, but...
Right.
Said that this had nothing to do with their religion or the color of their skin, that he was, you know, an aggressive man towards anyone that would get in the way of his parking. You know, we've lived in apartment...
Parking!
We've lived in apartment complexes and neighborhoods where there's limited parking. Some people get a little bit possessive or proprietary about the spots nearest to their house. But I can't imagine anyone killing someone over it.
I can imagine... In the abstract, no, not even in the abstract, of what these three Muslim kids felt, because I, not when they were being shot, clearly, because I'm still here, but I've lived in apartments most of my life, and in the last one we lived at, there was one guy who was known to habitually carry a weapon, and kind of had it in for me, and it was some touch and go stuff, and I would describe it as terror, and that's... Ah, jeez. I don't think it's that important. People around the world who are religious say that, you know, atheists lack morals, atheists lack this, that, and the other thing. We can do whatever the hell we like, and it's all right, and we get away with it. So the fact that he's an atheist is going to matter, is always going to matter. And the thing that we must do as a community, if we are going to stand by, or at least if I'm going to stand by what I stand by, is to not turn my back on that, is to not play no true Scotsman. That said, Becky, your father-in-law was in town this week.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, and I had
my father, your father-in-law.
I'm sorry, my father-in-law, your father. I'm bad at those. He's a pretty great guy. And
well, I think so.
Well, you know, I think we kind of play up the usual father-in-law, son-in-law kind of thing. But honestly, I really like him. I get along with him. And I was talking to him about this. And he said, I know how you feel. Every time I see something in the news where somebody shot or somebody attacks the White House, something like, you know, something bad happens, the first question in my mind, and it's terrible that this is the first question in my mind, is it a Jewish guy? And I looked at him and I said, I knew this intellectually, but today, emotionally, I know exactly how you feel.
And the reason my father asks that is because, I'm from a Jewish family. And, you know, when you exist as a member of a group that has assumptions, prejudices perpetuated about you, it's very difficult to then face having to speak for all members of that group.
Yeah.
People of any minority group will experience this, and minority in any way whatsoever, just anything that makes you a little bit different from the majority. And so it's very difficult when someone says, hey, look at that. There was an atheist who killed three Muslim young people who, by all accounts, were wonderful, you know, citizens, scholars, everything, even if they weren't, even if they were just, you know, three kids that, you know, did not amazing things. It doesn't justify that. And it's difficult to then be faced with, well, what do you think about this? See, don't atheists kill people? Aren't they bad? And we have to answer, yes, this atheist, this particular man, by all accounts, was a bad man in this action, did a very bad thing.
One thing I can say about our community is that Foundation Beyond Belief, an organization for whom I work for now, just to be upfront about it, put together a fund for in response to the shooting, and they had no trouble getting funds, and it'll go towards a good cause, and it'll be for at least some folks will get some help. I like history a lot, and I listen to history a lot. And in the last couple months, I've been listening to a little bit here, a little bit there, a full recording of CBS News on D-Day in World War II. And
why do you bring this up, Sam?
Because it's history, and I love history. And, you know, I mean, Edgar R. Murrow's fun to listen to if you're into radio like I am. And it got me thinking, if you live in a world where the bad guy is really easy to define, it's really easy to point at somebody and say, hey, they're the bad guy. There's two things that come to mind to me, that came to mind. One is you live in a rough time. That's when you're not allowed nuance, and when you can't see the other person's side of it, and they just seem evil to you, you are in fact living in, as they say, interesting times. And I think that's important to note. And I guess to me, nuance, being able to look at religious people and say, hey, you know, they're human beings, they just want to get a sandwich just like me, they want to have kids, they want to, you know, they want to pursue happiness just like I do, and they're not really bad people, it's reassuring to me. And that's it's just reassuring to me. It lets me know that the world, as I've been saying my whole life, just gets better and better and better, that we can know people we disagree with. Like this week with the In God We Trust thing, which I should be talking about that victory, but instead I'm talking about this. The other thing is, if you can point to a person and say, they're bad and I'm good, and it's really cut and dried, and you really understand what's going on, make sure you're the good guy. This guy in Chapel Hill, technically on our side, wasn't the good guy. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're gonna have an interview, something fun, recorded earlier in the week, about Ken Ham. Ken Ham's hilarious, always worth a laugh, and I think we need one.
Experience Mile High Humanism at the annual conference of the American Humanist Association, May 7th through 10th in Denver, Colorado. Network with chapter leaders, become a trained humanist celebrant, and hear from Lawrence Krauss, Marcy Hamilton, writers from The Onion, and more. Camp Quest is providing childcare, so bring the kids. High school and college students qualify for reduced registration fees. Go to conference.americanhumanist.org and register today.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee. AnnexRadio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
I don't know how much we've talked about Ken Ham on the show, but the only person in my world who can approach that stature is the likes of Kent Hovind. He's absolutely crazy, absolutely determined, and absolutely entertaining. He's a prominent figure in the world of biblical creationist belief. He maintains the website Answers in Genesis and has gained lots of infamy since being featured in the film Religulous and for debating Bill Nye the Science Guy. Ham founded and built a creation science museum in Kentucky several years ago and has been trying to add a Noah's Ark type thing to it in recent years. Joining us to talk about Ken Ham today is Dan Errol. Dan Errol is a journalist and blogger whose recent research into creationist Ken Ham's Ark Encounter project caused Ham to lose millions in local tax benefits. He joins us today to chat about that. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
So how does it feel to be the guy who cost Ken Ham about $18 million?
It feels good to be part of the group of people that helped.
Very good.
You know, I did play a significant role at the beginning, but it wouldn't have been possible without the help of groups like American United or Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, especially Rob Boston from over there. I got in contact with them immediately, and they helped kind of take my research, and they drafted a letter to the governor, and that kind of opened up the floodgates. So, you know, it feels really great to kind of see your hard work
floodgates
turn into something, because, you know, a lot of times you work, and you just don't feel like you're getting anywhere, and so that was really great.
Yeah, I'm well familiar with that, but could you give us an idea of sort of the timeline of how this all went down and how the groups interacted?
So around August, they had announced that they were applying, and it looked like they were going to get preliminary approval for a state tourism tax incentive, meaning anybody building a business in Kentucky that thought they could get tourism money into the city or into the state could get a rebate on their sales tax to help offset the cost of building and this and that. Because what their whole idea is, you bring in people go to restaurants, people shop at the mall, people get hotel rooms, and it's a kind of a way of giving back to entice businesses to build. And to do so, you have to kind of prove that you can, you know, make this kind of money. So anyways, Ken Ham had kind of been chatting about the fact that he was doing this, and I kind of thought it was comical, but didn't put much thought into it other than, I hope he doesn't get this money. Well, when it looked like he was going to, and he sent out a tweet saying something to the effect of, you know, we got $18 million, and I just tweeted back something like, you just stole $18 million from taxpayers.
Yes.
And then left it at that, and I moved on. You know, it was like one funny tweet I thought I sent, and I stopped paying attention. Well, it turns out he paid attention, and he wrote a blog post about that one tweet and about how secularists are lying. And because I had the fact that I write for Alternet and Huffington Post in my profile, you know, he wrote, you know, Huffington Post writer spreads misinformation about the Ark Encounter.
Right.
And so, you know, I had that, but I didn't really have anywhere to come back at him in a blog, because you go to Alternet, they don't really want to publish a back and forth fight with Ken Ham. and the same with Huffington Post. Like, they're fine if I had a story, but for me just to come back and combat his claims, I didn't have much to do. But at the same exact time, I had been approached by Pathos to start a blog on their network. And so I talked them into rushing it, because it takes months usually. And I was like, look, I have this thing I wrote, and I need to take down Ken Ham, and I need you to send it to me. And so they got me a blog set up. I just kind of went back at him and addressed his criticisms. Like, you know, I'm not anti-Christian. I'm anti, you know, using taxpayer money to build, you know, giant boats that are supposed to look like Noah's Ark. and so, you know, I kind of tried to get this conversation going. And in the midst of it, I'm digging through his blog and digging through his website, looking for anything I can come back at him with. And I just happened to see on the Ark Encounter website that little jobs button down on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wasn't even digging. I just was like, oh, I wonder what they're hiring for. And I clicked on it. Like, you know, are they looking for, like, people to act as dead bodies that float by the Ark if you're inside of it? Like,
I bet he'd love to hire a bunch of atheists to do that.
And so I clicked on it, and they were only hiring one position, and it was a CAD design position, you know, like sort of architect kind of work. And I realized that it had said, you know, working for the Ark is more than working for a theme park. It's working for a ministry. And that was a bit of a red flag, probably a fine line between that they can walk. But then I realized that they kept going on about how the job was to preach the word. That kind of goes out of the realm of a secular for-profit business. And then that you had to sign a statement of faith to work there.
Right.
And I kind of didn't do much with that information right away, because I kind of wanted to reach out to some people and make sure I knew the law like I thought I did. But a couple days later, I just saw on Twitter, it said, from Ken Ham, I'm going to be on AM 1340 to talk about the secular lies about the Ark Encounter. And I went, oh, I'm calling.
Can't resist that one.
And I called probably 40 times before it even rang once. And I thought about lying at first, like saying like I was a big fan and I wanted to have a question about how you present the Ark. But then I was like, I don't want to get on the air and then say who I am and then have them talk about the fact that I lied to get on.
Right.
Because then I just give them ammo. And I was like, so I'm just going to be honest. And so they said, you know, what's your name? Why are you calling? And I said, I'm the person that Ken Ham's talking about on the radio right now. And the guy, like, he stops and he goes, please hold. And the only part that really threw me off was they didn't tell me they were putting me on the air.
Oh.
He said, please hold. And then they just dumped me on the air.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I was kind of caught off guard because, you know, I'm sitting there with my headphones in and just kind of listening to Christian music on hold. And boom, like, I'm on. So I'm trying to catch up to myself. So I start asking about the tax incentive and how he keeps saying it's, you know, he's not getting given money as a rebate on money that they've taken in. And I'm kind of questioning why he keeps calling it a rebate if they're not getting money. And then I just dropped it and I said, okay, then tell me why you're discriminating against potential employees when you're a for-profit business. Click.
Right.
And you were hung up on.
I was hung up on. And then they continued.
Point of information, this was a Christian radio station?
Yes.
Big surprise.
Yeah, big surprise. The host the whole time was just, you know, blowing smoke up Ken Ham's rear end.
Yeah.
And
well done.
You know, just eating it all up. And And so I had it on my computer, so I turned my computer up right away, and Ken just went right after me. We're not hiring anything. We're not, and like it's like I was still on the air.
Yeah.
And then the host says something to the effect like, you know, oh, the caller's gone. Looks like he has some more research to do.
Right.
I was furious. I was so mad.
That happens a lot more in talk radio than people realize, and that was one of the promises I made to myself when I started this show, is I was never going to pull a trick like that, because that is so disingenuous.
Yeah. And it was like one of those. I just hit that blog so fast.
Right.
I tweeted him immediately and with a screenshot of the job and said, "You said you're not hiring."
Right.
Which he said, "Oh, that's a Answers in Genesis position. They'll just be tasked with our counter projects."
Let's play shell
so
game.
So I took that right away, sent it to Americans United. They came back and said, you know what? This is a gray area. They can probably skirt the law here, but if this went to court, I don't think it would hold up.
And the law here that we're talking about are statutes regarding discriminatory practices in hiring for nonprofits or for for-profits, or what's sort of the area here?
So it's equal opportunity employment, because the Ark Encounter is actually a for-profit business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a religious nonprofit like Answers in Genesis is. So if I want to work at Answers in Genesis, they can make sure I believe in everything they believe in.
Right.
They have every right to do so. And I do not want to take away that right. But in order for them to get these tax incentives, they needed to be a corporation, not a nonprofit.
Right.
So they set up the Ark Encounter LLC. And the Ark Encounter has to follow equal opportunity employment laws. And those laws state you can't discriminate for religious, race, sexual orientation, et cetera, et cetera. And so what they're trying to do is hire employees through their nonprofit and then kind of lend them to the for-profit,
mm-hmm.
which is just, they're skirting the law there.
Right.
So it's not 100% that they're breaking the law, but it's not that they're not. So it's kind of like one of those gray areas that would probably have to get battled in court, where even lawyers are like, yikes. Like,
yeah. I would say that whether or not they're breaking the law here is debatable, because, I mean, it'd be one thing if they were like subcontracting Dancers in Genesis and they were two completely separate organizations, but it's quite clear that they're not. It's, I mean, you said was the job advertisement on Answers in Genesis or Ark Encounter?
If you click on the job, it sends you to Answers in Genesis.
Well, there you go.
But it did say specifically Ark Encounter CAD designer. So it's, you know, they do kind of skirt that fine line.
On the other hand, if I steal a computer and change its serial number, I'm still guilty of theft. So
right.
So speaking of discrimination, Ken Ham recently filed his own lawsuit against the state of Kentucky about discrimination. Where is that coming from?
So he's trying to change the narrative.
Right.
He's claiming that they lost the tax incentive because they are a religious-based theme park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know at what point the state of Kentucky was confused that a Noah's Ark theme park was or was not religious-themed. But he seems to think that that's the case. And he believes, or I don't think he believes, but he is stating that the state reviewed the business and thinks they're preaching, and that's why they lost it. You know, the letter to their lawyers clearly states, you told us in 2010 you would not discriminate against employees, and here you are discriminating against employees.
Right.
In 2010, they actually signed a contract stating they would not discriminate against employees.
Mm-hmm.
But that contract expired because it's taken them so long to even break ground on this park, that their original contract and their original bid for this tax incentive had expired. So they had to actually reapply. And when they reapplied, they actually reapplied for, the first application, they wanted $72 million.
That's right.
The second application, they wanted $18 million, because they had to scale down their project so much because nobody is donating to this thing.
Right.
So, Dan, do you know anything about a recent study that suggested that Ham's original projected attendance numbers for the park were really inflated?
Yes. What they did is, so when you apply for this tourism incentive, you have to show the state that you're actually going to get the visitors that you claim you are. So a big example Ken uses is the Kentucky NASCAR track that they built.
Right.
They had to say, like, we have this many races here per year. you know, this many people come. Here's how much they'll spend on hotels. Here's the teams of people that come in. Here's, you know, and they could show how much money this was going to bring the state. Now, this is a report done by the state, paid for by the business asking for it. But when Ken Ham applied, he came with his own report. Written by a company that does reports like this, but they do reports like this for a retail clothing store, like in a strip mall. Like, they're not like a big, they don't do big projects like this.
Right.
The owner of this surveying company happens to be the co-author of a book with Ken Ham.
Tricky, oh. Tricky.
Shocking.
So it wasn't too shocking to see that his projected numbers were, you know, 2 million visitors in the first year. And then, you know, I think 4 million after that. And then it would come down, you know, to an average level, which is expected, of course. But the state, being as smart as they are, didn't quite buy into this idea and said, well, you know, we appreciate that you've brought us these numbers. And that's kind of how they preliminarily approved the park. And then they said, but we're going to pay this Chicago-based company that actually does this kind of style work for a living to do it. And Ken's, or, you know, Answers in Genesis or Art Encounter, whoever paid for it, had to shell out the money to pay this other company. And the report was done even after they had lost the bid. That's because it was paid for. But it never really came to light. But Ed Helmsley from Kentucky, and he works with the Freedom From Religion Foundation, used the Freedom of Information Act to get his hands on it.
Right.
And so the state sent him over the report, and I think the peak attendance was 325,000.
Far cry from the 2 million or 4 million.
Yeah.
Massively off, which is just laughable. And so, in the truth of it all, this report wouldn't really have changed anything. It wouldn't have eliminated them from getting a tax benefit if they had followed the other, you know, employment laws. But it kind of shows who you're dealing with.
Right.
Right.
The fact that these are the steps they're going to take to get what they want is a real eye-opener.
Well, I guess it may be, there may be some ethical questions about asking you to speak for Ken Ham, but I think it's hilarious, so I'm going to do it anyway. We've been watching the news about Answers in Genesis. We've been watching the news about his Creation Museum and Ark Encounter, and it looks like this organization, you know, these things are losing money hand over fist. The attendance is never what they think it's going to be. They have to do, like, install zip lines. I'm expecting them to open a bar any day now. You know, and now they're trying to build and build this Ark Encounter thing. How much of the interactions and the controversy and his stated beliefs, how much of this do you think is tactical versus how much of this do you think he actually believes?
I would put his tactical up over 95%. I believe he's a creationist.
Right.
I don't doubt that he believes and the literal truth of the Bible, because I have no reason to. If he says he does, he does. I don't, and I have no evidence to show otherwise. But the words he chooses, the way he decides to ignore certain things about cases, and case in point, hey, you've just lost your tax incentive because you're discriminating against employees, and then you file a lawsuit that says we lost our tax incentive because we're Christians.
Yeah.
Like, that's tactical.
Right.
And and the thing is I think he knows he'll lose the case if it goes to court. But if the case goes to court, the sympathy will be massive for him.
Absolutely.
And he thinks that's going to bring in donations. Mm-hmm. The problem is I don't think it will, because I think he's tapped those resources dry. They're still, I think, last I checked, they were still over $20 million shy of their goal.
Ouch.
And that doesn't include the $18 million that they need to get back to finish.
It might change his perspective then on whether Noah could really have built a boat truly in this period of time before the rains came. You might think that it would,
I never saw the passage where Noah sued for $18 million worth of tax incentives to finish his project.
I'd watch that movie, personally.
So it's just funny every time I see the pictures he posts of, like, big giant trucks pouring concrete, and I always reply, like, just like Noah.
Yeah, how long have they been building this Ark Encounter now?
They announced it in 2010, and they built a basement so far, it looks like.
I believe that's what we call a self-refuting argument, actually.
So, out of curiosity, like, do you think that his ideas are dangerous, or is all this just kind of silly fun and worth, like, laughing at and moving on?
It's both.
Yay!
There's parts of it that are silly. 2 days ago, he blogged about the fact that unicorns existed.
That was amazing.
And if you doubt that, you're not a true Christian. Those things are silly.
Yeah.
Those don't do, like, even if some like 8-year-old was like, oh, I believe in unicorns because Ken Ham said, I don't think that that's a dangerous thing because a kid's just going to grow out of that. But when he is spending money and time on trying to rally a base to go after public education, when he is trying to take $18 million in tax money from a state that has a massive poverty level,
right,
and has a failing school system that could really use that $18 million, that's dangerous. I think even for Christians, his beliefs are fringe. I read a recent study that was broken down that looked at even the people that don't quite believe in, you know, evolution by natural selection and still sort of lean towards the Bible. They don't go as far as Ken Ham. He's in the 10th percentile of those that believe in a more biblical view. His views are so minute. So it's not that he's got a lot of ground, but it's that he can do a lot of damage if he can incite a big enough base. And keeping that in check and refuting bad arguments when they get public are important. It still kind of irks me that Bill Nye kind of held him to the level he's at now.
Yeah.
But now that he's there, we have to keep taking him down until he goes away.
I can see that argument. Yeah, I was in favor of the debate because I think, you know, sometimes we need to have those conversations because there's a significant population of people who feel that way, and we need to address them. And if they believe in, you know, if they believe Ken Ham, then that's maybe the guy we should talk to. But he's definitely swung this into his economic favor, and like you said, is taking resources literally away from an impoverished state and impoverished, you know, educational institutions, and that's a problem. In addition, I'm reading his book about that debate, which really should be titled How I Actually Won by Ken Ham. But so we've got religious discrimination lawsuits, discriminating, somebody suggesting discrimination so that he can get money, and then actual discrimination by the same guy. We've got this ark being built that certainly wasn't built in 3 months and certainly isn't going to be able to hold every species on Earth, or, you know, like I said, the self-refuting argument. This is an amazing storm of just all this awesome and crazy stuff, pun intended. What's the path forward?
Right now, it's waiting to see what the state does. I fear that the state's going to cave to keep this out of court.
Okay.
And that they're just going to assign them the money and say, here you go. Or they're going to have them sign some sort of, you know, pay that. I'm not sure how they could do this without having us come after them for allowing discrimination, but I'm afraid the state's going to try to backdeal this so they can keep that in court.
Right.
So now the pressure is on to get this into court,
mm-hmm.
to let the state take this case, because it could go up a long ways.
Right.
Because the state doesn't seem interested in playing this game. They want the park. That's the thing. The state wants the park. They have said so a million times. We want this park.
Well, yeah.
But they want the park to follow the law because they have constituents and they have the federal government breathing down their neck that, you know, aren't going to just allow them to shove over $18 million to blatant discrimination if organizations like AU and Freedom From Religion and American Atheists and everybody else are as loud as we've been. They're going to take notice. And I think we could bring this further.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher this goes, the more damage we can do to other groups that are going to try to do this in the future.
Right.
Salvation Army already lost a case very similar to this.
Oh, that's true.
So it's like we have cases to base this on, and we have people like the Salvation Army who, you know, need to be put in their place at the same time. And maybe this will deter another organization from trying something like this and this save us all the headache.
Yeah. Well, final question before we move on. They seem bound and determined to build this ark. You know, they're going to follow what their God tells them or whatever. When it finally opens, are you going to go?
It's not going to open.
Fair enough.
I doubt it will. If it does, I'd love to. Only if I can get them to let me in for free from giving them my money.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do have an open invitation from Ken to come hang out with him at the museum.
Mm-hmm.
So if that opens, maybe I could make a vacation out of it.
And this is his creation museum, right?
Yes. Yes. He has invited me to come meet him at the Creation Museum, have some coffee and chat. This was an invitation given to me before I cost him $18 million. I'd have to check up on that and see if it still stands.
See if it's still open.
You think you could show up and say, I'll get the coffee. You seem a little strapped for cash lately.
Ow! Oh, boy. So, switching gears, you're also author of the Amazon best-selling book, Parenting Without God. Every once in a while, we get emails that work really well with the folks we've got on with us. Do you mind if we run this email by you?
Please do.
All right. Bit of a long one, but definitely worth it. This is Rodney from Arkansas, who writes, my wife is religious and I'm an atheist. We have a 3-year-old daughter, and my wife thinks that it's her duty to take her to church in order to share her faith. The compromise I'd proposed is for our daughter not to attend Sunday school while she is so young. This seems to be working so far. The new complication is that my parents are very religious and share the same thoughts on indoctrination as my wife. I fear that my parents and my wife will take our daughter to church as often as possible, and my objections will become an issue of blame and shaming. I refuse to accept the onus of explaining to our daughter why I won't let her go to Sunday school, because I'm not trying to punish my child, and I know that she will perceive it as such. How can I defend this to my wife? Any suggestions on how to explain skepticism to a 3-year-old who likes going to church because mommy goes, and it's fun? I feel that I should be able to discuss this with my daughter, and let her formulate her own opinions, objections, questions, and agreements independently of my beliefs. Again, that seems way too complicated a subject for her at this age. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Wow. This, you know, every time I hear this a lot, this is way more common than I think people even think. It makes me really happy I married an atheist. Because, wow, I mean, I even just try to imagine the stress that has to put on two people sometimes.
Right.
But the fine line here is the point where if he doesn't want to, you know, start big fights over it every time, kind of finding that balance where if the kid's going, the dad needs time after to sit and talk at what the child learned.
Right.
If he's so inclined, he could go with her and kind of see firsthand what she's being told and not be interruptive or anything like that when he's there, but, you know, kind and courteous, and then go home and discuss these sorts of lessons and how they make her feel and how maybe she would handle a situation. You know, a lot of times they try to put you in like a moral situation and show how God can get you out of it.
Right.
And, you know, the right biblical thing to do. Maybe he can show her examples of empathetic ways of dealing with these situations and sort of just kind of offset each thing she's being told and to not have her believe that there's only one way of thinking. And he needs to be honest and say, I don't believe any of this. As honest as possible.
Yeah.
It's not that he needs to say, I don't believe any of this and you should too. But he can say, look, I don't believe this and your mother does. Your mother thinks I'm wrong. I think she's wrong. You have to make your own decision, not based on what we think. And this is just going to come with age. I mean, if she's very young, I think, if I remember you saying.
3 years old.
So it's going to be a progressive thing. And really, it is something that's going to change with age as well. So she might seem really, really into it right now. But I can tell you, at a young age, I used to stand on my parents, my grandparents' fireplace and reach to them. And I knew I was going to be a pastor.
Yeah.
But then, you know, girls grew boobs. I had much different interests at school than going to church.
Yeah.
Right.
And I had friends, and I didn't want to go to church. And my friends' parents didn't make them go to church. And, you know, life changes and gets in the way. And I was very heavily indoctrinated. But it doesn't always just stick if you have someone that allows a free thinker to grow. So even if she goes there and they pound this into her head, if he's there to talk to her about it after, he can, I don't want to say like remove it all from her, but put that two sides to every coin in her head. And so she's not going to bed worried about hell because her dad's not worried about it. And if she is worried about it, and if she is up crying at night, she has someone that can talk to him or talk to her about it that's not going to just reinforce that belief. Like, if I got worried about hell as a kid, both my parents still believed it existed.
Yeah.
And so they would tell me, you're a good person. You're doing good. Don't be scared of it. I didn't have anyone telling me, you know what? It's not there. And he can do that.
The sort of frustration I see coming through in this, I feel, is that the mother seemed to have moved the goalposts. Like, they had an agreement when his daughter was smaller that here's how we're going to deal with this. She can go to church, but she can't go to Sunday school. And now mom is changing the rules and kind of, you know, without asking him, without getting his permission, she's just doing it and making the daughter come to her side on her own. Would there be value in sitting down with his wife and saying, look, we set boundaries beforehand. We need to hold to these boundaries. Or is that, do you think it's too late to try and have that conversation?
No, if it's too late, then the marriage is over.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, as awful as that sounds, if they can't sit down and talk about that, then what are they doing?
Right.
So no, I think very much so. Sit down and sit, like, you know, talk about exactly what you just said. Like, you know, you're moving the goals. You're doing things behind my back. You're doing things that we didn't agree upon. And he needs to be just honest and upfront. Just like, I mean, really, you can think about this in any, I'm not much of a marriage counselor, but, you know, take this as just as you would any other issue in a marriage, and you just have to sit down and talk to her. And if something makes you that uncomfortable, you need to make your voice heard.
And I would add that, you know, the churches, they're factories for this sort of thing. Everybody involved is a past master at converting people, and especially with children. That's the whole point of Sunday school in a lot of ways. But Rodney is his daughter's father, and that has enormous influence on a child. So don't think you're incapable of influencing your child or explaining things to your child, especially if you're doing it without the threat of force or the threat of hell. I mean, that on its own can be very persuasive, I think.
And the other thing that I think about is, having worked and continuing to work with organizations like Camp Quest, you have a place that is fun that isn't Sunday school. And so making sure that you have a place that someone can explore those free-thinking ideas that isn't Sunday school, it also shows that there's a real need for this for children of younger ages, to have fun ways to explore, to inquire, to test ideas, things like that, at a very young age. And I hope that Rodney could have some time with his daughter where he's able to go to the children's museum or go to the science museum or go to the kids programming at the library and explore some of those areas in another fun way that's sort of similar to church or an analog to church.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, to keep in mind that children listen to authority figures, which is why church works so well on them.
Yeah.
But to keep in mind, to his child, he's an authority figure, and he doesn't need to tell her what to believe, but she's going to listen and admire what he says. And so that will play a role in her thinking. So if he is upfront, talks, and is honest, she's going to hear that from somebody that, you know, she thinks I'm supposed to listen to and isn't just going to brush it off. Mm. And so like you said, having the two voices, having someone to show her, you know, like going to museums or the Ark Encounter or other fine establishments. What if I could sneak that in there? they could. Yeah, he can offer two sides of it. Another thing, depending on the area and how well they're run, there are things like Sunday assemblies.
Yeah,
where, you know, he can offset by going to that, and she can hear. If she enjoys church, then she can enjoy that same sort of environment, but with lessons that are much more valuable.
So, Dan, what other projects are you working on, and where can people find you online?
Sure. You can find me online at the best place is Twitter. That's where I'm the most active. it's at Dan Errol. I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/DanErrolBlog, I think it is. And then danerrol.com, and that will link you to all of my writing. My current project, other than harassing Ken Ham 24 hours a day, my blog, which is on, I said earlier, the Pathos Network, which is called Danthropology. That's where I write about a lot of the Ken Ham stuff, but I also cover just news and politics and other things that I'm just kind of in the mood to write about. In the more or less in the atheism sphere. I don't go out too much into politics outside of atheism on the blog. I am drafting my second book, but haven't quite nailed down every last direction I want to take it in, but it is inspired by my dealings with Ken Ham. It's not really a book about him or about his organizations so much, but about the persistence of finding problems in church-state separation and how to deal with them, and tactics that organizations like his and others use to get in the back door through politics and other ways to sneak their beliefs into public school or to try, you know, try to take advantage of tax dollars, et cetera, things like Salvation Army. And so I'm kind of putting together a book and seeing what direction I can take it to kind of give readers a sort of, here's what to look out for and here's how to tackle it, without making it a really boring how-to. But I think if I write enough about Ken Ham, it won't be too boring.
I think we need that. That's the kind of documentation we need in the movement. Dan Errol is a journalist who blogs at Danthropology on the Pathos Network. Thank you very much for increasing our chances of being noticed by Ken Ham, something which has been a long-term goal of mine since we started the show. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue on with current events.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Billy, I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We've got some people to thank. We got to thank Rick from Elma, Peggy from Kent, Scott from Langley, British Columbia. How you doing, Scott? Manuel from Bogota, Colombia, and Stephen from Elkhorn, Nebraska. All of them this week have met Peggy's challenge. Wow. I think Colombia is a new pin on the map, isn't it?
I think it may be. We have a very international fan base this week.
Oh, you should see the weird little dance she did when she said international.
Muchísimas gracias, Manuel de Bogotá, Colombia.
Fantastic. Peggy's challenge is the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. If you'd like to help us keep the lights on, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. It'll take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly to show production. And, well, that first segment was weird, I have to admit. Little off my game there, I think, but under the circumstances.
It's addressing a very difficult topic.
It's a hard one for me. And, you know, we're not even talking about the thing in Copenhagen yet, at least on the radio end of it. This is going to be a long episode for those of you on the podcast. And so if you're hearing this on the radio, you can go to our website and you'll get stuff that we're going to be talking about off the air, including what we did this week with the In God We Trust thing in Clark County. We won, but that might be short term. There's other cool stuff. I'd like to talk about one nice thing. The Madison, Wisconsin City Council is considering adding atheists to their non-discrimination law. While the law already prohibits discrimination on the basis of religious beliefs, the new language specifically would include non-belief. Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, whose offices are in Madison, said that religion is already a protected class, but many do not realize this also includes those who choose not to practice religion. The proposed law change also includes protections for the homeless. We've said some, well, not mean things about FFRF. I actually really like the folks at FFRF. They're good people.
We've had Annie Laurie Gaylor on the air.
And we have, now that you mention it. And but we had different tactics. This one, though, I like this one.
I like it, too. You know, when we say that people cannot experience discrimination based on creed, it's pretty clear to a lot of people that that would mean that someone who believes in Jesus couldn't receive discrimination or couldn't be on the discriminating end of things.
Yeah.
Someone who believes in Allah wouldn't be able to experience discrimination. But it's not so clear all the time, and sometimes not even in courts or in commissions or in councils.
Yeah.
That also means if your creed is that you do not have a belief in God, you also cannot be discriminated against for that lack of belief in God.
And, you know, I could, again, this is one of the things that I know I'm going to get emails on. If it's freedom of religion, if there's no establishment clause, then this is, you know, this is secondary, this isn't useful, or this doesn't serve a purpose. For one thing, laws are not programming languages. You don't need to worry about, you actually sometimes need to repeat things in different laws. Also, there are differing standards here. Like, discrimination in Washington State is handled differently than discrimination at the federal level. And in fact, Washington State has a wider interpretation of discrimination.
There is no federal anti-discrimination bill saying that you cannot be discriminated against based on your sexual orientation. Many states, many cities have that. Washington Right. State does.
And given in Clark County this week, I directly referenced a sign saying freedom of religion does not mean freedom from religion. I think this needs to be said in some places. I think this is an argument worth having. I think this is something that needs to be said because we seem to have a significant portion of the population who don't get it.
And one thing that I like is that this isn't just an atheist bill. This isn't an anti-discrimination bill that's just about people's beliefs. This is one that has a few changes. This is including more protections for more segments of our society.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you know, I mean, here we just have the law change, including protections for people for homeless. That's a vulnerable population that sometimes experiences discrimination in terms of housing law, in terms of default discrimination, in terms of inability to get appropriate documentation or identification, things like that. And this isn't, you know, I mean, atheists are just a segment of society, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
This isn't an atheist agenda. This isn't an atheist bill.
So I've got kind of an thing here. Kansas? How do you do that one?
The people of Kansas.
The people of Kansas. The state of Kansas House Federal and State Affairs Committee approved HB 2075, a bill that would officially designate space in the Capitol for prayer. It would rename room 221E, which is currently adorned with religious art, as the Capitol Meditation Room. A bookshelf in the room contained the Bible, plus copies of America's War on Christianity, and What Makes God Cry the Most, Things You Really Should Know About Abortion. Representative Annie Tietze, who opposed the bill, noted that the room contained no other religious texts. The room reportedly had paintings of the Ark of the Covenant and George Washington in prayer and Moses burning bush, as well as a painting of Jesus that has since been removed.
This is the general meditation room, but we only have Christian artifacts and Christian art and Christian books, and from a very specific segment of Christian belief.
Yeah. See, I'm okay with them having a religious do things room, because
just like hospitals have chapels.
The hospitals have chapels. You know, airports have bathrooms. And if you're going to do something like this, I'd prefer you do it in a stall where I can't see you. So, I mean, a prayer room, yeah, I'm okay with that. I don't think that's an establishment thing. Unless you hang it with kittens saying, "Hang in there, Christian," posters.
Are we talking about the middle school guidance counselor meditation room?
That's what this is. This is Christian guidance counselor all the way. I don't have a big problem with this. I don't.
If people want to pray or meditate in their own way, should be fine.
Now, this is a question that we could go back and forth with somebody who might actually know the law, because, hint, I'm not one of them. But it seems like just making accommodations for people who are religious doesn't always mean it's a, you know, religious discrimination thing.
It seems that way, too. The backstory, though, here is that this already was a room with Christian stuff in it that people were afraid all the stuff was going to get yanked. And so they said, hey, this is no longer just a room with Christian stuff. This is our official prayer meditation room.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic. My name is Sam. With me today was Becky. I'd like to thank Dave, and I'd like to thank Dan Errol. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Go to our email, say questions at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844 Skeptic. If you're listening on the stream or the podcast, stick around. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next week.
Along the Yelm Highway.
Hey, I told you to stick around.
We're so glad you did.
It's in the...
Oh, man. Welcome back to the, to the green room of, Ask an Atheist, if you will. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number. Give us a call. You can actually tweet us at Ask an Atheist WA. I don't talk about that enough. I actually do get tweets when we're in here. That happens to me sometimes.
Tweets, emails, Facebook messages, retumbles.
I haven't figured out how to implement the carrier pigeon RFC yet. Otherwise, I'd do that.
Oh, owl delivery.
Yeah, so I was kind of bummed out in the first segment, if you hadn't figured that out.
It's always something that bums you out when you see violence in the world and you see maybe people being associated with atheism. It's hard to take.
Yeah, it is. But, and there's another thing we haven't really talked about yet at all, but I don't know that I'm ready to talk about it yet, which is what happened in Copenhagen. I mean, very quickly, there was a talk on blasphemy. You were on top of that.
Yeah, so there was a debate, a free speech debate going on in Copenhagen, and this was on Saturday. A gunman fired up to 40 rounds, attacking the attendees, the participants. There was a filmmaker that was killed. There were three officers that were injured. And then hours later, a gunman who is now allegedly, it's turning out to be the same man, shot and killed a guard outside a synagogue. That was late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Apparently there was a bat mitzvah celebration going on, a party, and stormed a synagogue, killed a guy there. And Sunday morning, it looks like the Danish police were able to locate this suspect and killed him in a firefight outside his home.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, the free speech debate, the seminar, the event, that had some high-profile guests in attendance. There was the French ambassador, François Zimmeret, and there was the Swedish cartoonist, Lars Vilks. We know Vilks because in 2009, he published caricatures of Muhammad, and he has basically been under death threat since. He has bodyguards. He goes in places. He doesn't hide, certainly, but he is aware of his surroundings. And it is thought that his presence there exacerbated the attacks or provoked, someone's ire enough that they decided to go shoot someone.
Right. I'm not ready to talk about this one yet, to be honest with you. I actually specifically stayed away from the news so that I wouldn't watch somebody get shot live on television again. Because really, I've had enough of that over the last year.
It's a recapitulation of the things that we've been seeing.
Yeah, but I kind of brought it up in order
to dismiss it.
So I don't want to do that right now. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I want to stay positive. And you're like, people dead, people being shot, shooting a synagogue.
Let's go to Washington,
grumble,
where there's no one
grumble,
dead.
Grumble, grumble, grumble. People do die here. I mean, that is a thing that happens.
Certainly,
but
but some positive stuff.
Yeah, some positive stuff. So as we spoke about last week, we went down to Clark County, which is the county immediately north across the river, the Columbia River, to Portland, where the county was going to put a sign that said, "In God We Trust," up on it, much like the sign that we fought against here in Pierce County back in August. Now,
which still hasn't gone up, by the way.
Which hasn't gone up yet. And we went down there, we did the thing that we did, and it was a fun time was had by all. I'd like to bring somebody in. Joining us now is Robert Ray. He's president of Humanists of North Puget Sound, also on the board of Humanists of Washington, an organization both me and Becky are a part of, and about 15,000 other organizations. How are you doing, Robert?
I am good. How about yourself?
Not too bad.
Now, Robert, I think that you joined us in Clark County on Tuesday as the grassroots organizer for the American Humanist Association in the Northwest?
That is correct.
Oh, wow. So you were there. So you were there for that job. I mean, I do ask an atheist. I was there specifically as president of Humanists of Washington. So we were, we were there doing our local thing. And so, honestly, we get there very early. Was it, 9 a.m.?
9 a.m. for our rally.
Yeah.
And there were, and what I was surprised by is the donuts.
yeah, that was kind of neat. I wasn't expecting donuts.
So this was actually donuts that were provided by Brian Harvey, who is the coordinator for the local CFI branch. And it was great. There was a poster. There were about three dozen donuts and a table and said, free donuts and coffee for people of all faith or no faith. We are all Americans. So I think we split a chocolate glazed one, right? Right,
yeah.
Sam?
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah. Well, that's not interesting is that... I don't think any of the other took any donuts.
Yeah, so there were about 50 of us there, but there were also...
Bikers for Christ.
Bikers for Christ and some other people who brought really stupid signs. And one of the... was it one of the Bikers for Christ? Or I don't remember who it was.
I don't know. It was a gentleman with a John 3:16 sign.
That's it. It was the John 3:16 guy, because there's always one. So, yeah, he kept... coming by, looking over the donuts, seeing what we had, and then passing on. He did that three or four times.
I don't know. He said, I'm not eating none of your atheist donuts. Actually, he didn't say anything.
He didn't say anything. He didn't. Well, yeah.
Right.
The only thing I communicated was John 3:16, because none of us have heard that one before.
No, never.
So they were respectful on the sidelines. We were, we had our meeting. There were 50 or so of us there. And somehow that turned into, in the media down in Portland, into a clash between theists and atheists.
There was that one discussion I had.
Oh, tell me about it.
Got a little heated. Oh, well, after I gave my short little speech right in front of the main crowd, I went over and talked to some people on the side. They were whole signs. And... basically, I got into a discussion as to why I'm there and, why can't you just leave good enough alone type discussion. And one of the women there said that can't even bring Bibles into school anymore. And I flatly told her that is not true.
Yeah.
They are allowed to bring Bibles into school. She said, well, my granddaughter got suspended for it some years ago. And I said, then the school was wrong, and I would have fought in your favor on that condition.
Yeah.
But we got into a little bit of heated discussion. The camera was there right about that time.
Right.
So,
and that's a weird one. It's always somebody's granddaughter's roommate's boyfriend from college. It's very rarely, and every time we track these stories down, it always ends up being, well, they brought a Bible to school, but they were also screaming and spray painting. And
well, from what I did a little research in about 2004, there was an incident at Clark County Schools where a girl told one of her classmates he was going to hell, and she got suspended for using hell.
Okay.
So, yeah. That's the only incident I can find. I'm not saying that's her incident, but that's the only one I found.
That's a weird one.
I think if you are, if you have a disciplinary history of some sort, and you are harassing and threatening a classmate, if you're disrupting the educational process, that is generally a suspendable offense given certain other disciplinary conditions in history. In general, speaking very in general as a public educator.
So there are.
Well, if I read this right, it was a second grader and she was suspended for using harsh language.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's a historical word. I don't know. I got a weird. Well, I think we all kind of have weird attitudes about cursing or whatever. So, I think we can leave that alone. But every time somebody says they got banned for being a Christian or they got persecuted for bringing a Bible to school, there's always something attached to it, and that's what bothers me. I mean, I would really like.
Right.
I'm okay. No, I wouldn't really like it. I would be very annoyed if this happened. But one of these times, I'd like one of these stories to turn out so that we have common cause with these people.
Right.
I'd like that. But it just never seems to come up. This was way bigger than the Pierce County one. It's got a lot more attention. I know I got talked to by a couple papers, and then you guys got talked to. You guys were approached by a few places, right, Robert?
Yeah, actually, Amy got on the local TV channels.
Yeah.
Amy, so I thought that was awesome.
Amy being your wife?
Yeah, Amy being my wife. The one who usually likes to stand in the corner and wait for me to do my thing.
Yeah.
So she got approached by two TV stations and an audio. She's not sure what the audio was. I think it was probably radio. But
right.
but I found that interesting.
I did too. But actually, what I really liked is you're right. She's the one who she usually stands by and doesn't have much to say. And then somebody somebody pointed a camera at her and pointed a microphone at her, and off to the races. She totally rocked that. I saw
absolutely
later.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed. And that was just outside.
Yeah.
We had a straight up just regular old rally. I did a little speaking. Like I do.
I think someone said, "Preach it, Sam."
Yeah, and I think you said that.
I did.
And then we went inside, and it was packed. Yeah. Much like how would you compare it to how things went down in Pierce County?
I think we had a larger number of people at the Clark County hearing in the Clark County Council.
Yeah.
You know, it's also strange because Pierce County, it's sometime, you know, in the middle of summer that this happened. A lot of people can take off work. It might be 5 in the afternoon or noontime or 10. But this is a Tuesday morning at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And people still find their way there. I mean, for things that are important and dear to one, you make the time to either have someone advocate on your behalf or you go down and testify before your elected officials yourself. I think also one of the things that made this interesting and really powerful is that it was a really collaborative effort between the CFI branch, the Freedom From Religion Foundation Portland area. You had Humanists of Greater Portland. You had Portland State Secular Student Alliance. You had AHA. You had Humanists of Washington. You had so many groups representing people that live in that area, in Vancouver, in Clark County.
Yeah, I heard the Methodists were going to show up, but I don't think I actually saw them, unfortunately.
There was a Methodist church that did post on Facebook and in the local newspaper editorial saying, "We stand united with people of all faiths in saying that this should remain free from government. Government should remain free from the trappings of religion." So I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't have someone there, but it is nice to acknowledge and buoying to acknowledge that there are people of religious backgrounds that also believe, hey, you know what? This shouldn't be happening in our government.
Yeah. And another thing that was different between what happened at Pierce County and what happened in Clark County is Clark County, I mean, there was clapping, there was cheering for each side.
Oh, it was like British Parliament.
It was, no, it was way more positive than that. But it was, it was a lot more socially, there was a lot more social pressure going on there on both sides. I mean, I think it was better attended by both sides.
Right. It most certainly was, because I remember watching the Pierce County debate, and it seemed that there were maybe 9 or 10 of the same people going up in Pierce County. Of course, you guys had a lot more amendments you had to speak on, whereas we had probably, 30 people speak?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was definitely better attended, and a lot more attention was paid to this one.
Sure. So we've got, it was a 2.5 hour long testimony thing, but we've picked a few clips that we thought we'd play for you. The link to the full thing, if you want to see it with video, will be at askanatheist.tv, but we thought we'd get some clips that may interest you. And the first one, this is fairly early on. Becky, you were picking these out. So which one is this?
This is Jack Davis. He's a resident down there, and he apparently testifies kind of frequently.
All right.
Yeah, he seemed to be known.
Why do we need a sign stating "In God We Trust"? Who does it really speak to? Because people who do put their trust in God certainly don't need a sign to remind them.
There's that applause I was talking about.
Conversely, those who don't believe in a supreme being also don't need a sign to remind them. And do you really believe that God needs a sign on the wall? Did we elect God to run this county, or did we elect the three of you?
I like the end of that one.
Yeah, that one was good. That was the first big one for our side was Jack, if I remember right.
Yeah, it looks like the religious folks got in pretty early and front-loaded, which I was okay with, because it got all the stuff that we were We were expecting to hear out of the way right away. At one point, I mean, I was tempted to yell bingo about 8 times. I had to be honest.
We heard that this is a Christian nation. We heard majority should rule. We heard a vocal minority shouldn't infringe on our Christian rights. We heard they're taking God out of the public schools. Oh, we're also taking humanists believe that humans are God.
Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear it, we're actually going to stick with our side on this one, just to, I guess, continue the positivity, even if it wasn't actually all that positive.
So very fair.
This is the next one. This was, I think, one of the more emotive ones, Becky?
Yes. This one is by an activist in Vancouver Skeptics named John.
This motto does not represent the entire nation. It does not represent me, and it does not represent many who are my age. I am not a God-fearing person. But I spent half of my life pretending to be one because I thought it was the only choice. I had to say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning, one nation under God. I had to be mentally conditioned that this is one nation under God. I had to be told that patriots believe in God. And I don't agree with that. That motto does not represent me. And all it does is slap me in the face. All it does is tell me that I'm not welcome and that I'm not American.
Now, sometimes I get kind of weirded out when people are take that approach to it, the preaching approach, as you said. But man, that landed well. Yeah. I thought.
Yeah, that was powerful. I actually spoke to him after the meeting, and I remember one of the things he spoke about during his speech was the altercation on Facebook he had with Counselor Mador.
Yeah.
So, and I remember reading some of that, and he was absolutely on point with that.
That's what I found out later, is that there's a lot of conversation and a lot of back and forth between the people in favor of this bill and those against on Facebook. There was a lot more social media engagement on this one.
Yeah, Council Chair David Mador actually went on Facebook and had uploaded a video of himself talking about how great this motto would be, which is a very strange thing to open yourself up to as a politician.
Robert, did you see that one? Because I hadn't.
No.
Okay.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I guess we got to track it down, because... Especially given what came later, but no spoilers. here's the next one. This one comes from the young, a representative of the Young Democrats of Clark County, and much like the first one, he actually opened up and said, "Hey, I'm a religious person, but I'm speaking, you know, I'm still against this," which is nice. I like to see that.
But they've worked up the courage to come in here. They've got an issue that they care about, and they want to make their voice heard. They walk in, they see the words, "In God We Trust," on the wall. And what do they think? Well, I'm not Christian. Is this where I belong? Is this government even willing to consider my point of view?
Comments, Robert?
Yeah, I thought he was absolutely on point there. I mean, especially coming from his point of view. You know, when we walk into a building and we see it doesn't represent us as atheists. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
So, and it does take, especially for the younger generation, it takes a lot of courage to get in there and actually speak face-to-face with these elected officials, because we kind of put them on a small pedestal. So it's harder to get in there and talk to them.
Yeah.
When you add something like that, it makes it even harder.
I think it's also difficult because Mielke and Mador, we're kind of openly, I mean, you know, they were saying words about positivity and stuff like that, but it seemed like there was some open hostility or some patronizing going on between the politicians and the people who vote for them.
I really felt that for sure. I mean, Mador started out his thing saying, "We welcome applause. We welcome, you know, good gestures and things like that. But we are all civil here, and so there's no place for anything disparaging." Which is to say, we only want to hear your good comments. We don't want to hear your criticisms. That's right off the bat what that said to me,
right,
as someone who is listening to elected officials and saying, "We're going to dismiss you and think that you're being mean if you offer criticisms during public comment." Isn't that what public comment is for?
Yeah.
Right.
So I guess, and then there was this comment. I don't know as much about this one, Becky.
This is from Jennifer Chilton. She is, I believe, from CFI Vancouver or Portland area, which covers Portland and Vancouver. And we'll listen to this one, and we'll kind of frame it in the rest of the comments.
Adding this phrase to the wall is nothing but divisive. You can clearly see the incredible division this proposal has brought out in our county. I am simply in support of a secular, neutral government for all residents. In contrast...
Here's the thing. That one little line, divisive, or that one little word, I think was stated by so many of us and was so visible. It was demonstrated to be divisive. And for anyone to say, oh, this is something that brings the community together to see this and feel happy when looking at it, it would just be impossible to justify that.
Yeah.
Right.
So, dare I play me?
Yeah, I think you really, you were the one that actually showed it. You didn't need to say this is divisive.
That was the thing, as I was talking, is we could talk about divisive, and they were being openly, like I said, not hostile, but patronizing to a lot of people in the room, and Milky was constantly talking about how things were being spun and manipulated while being a master manipulator. Well, no, not master manipulator. I mean, it was really obvious.
A fumbling manipulator.
Becky declined to speak, but I walked it past her, so I think you deserve some authorial credit on this one.
Okay, fair enough. And, let's hear it, Sam.
All right.
Hi, my name's Sam Mulvey. I'm president of Humanists of Washington, but I'm from Tacoma, so perhaps you shouldn't listen to what I have to say. But on the other hand, one wonders why you're listening to what people in Bakersfield, California have to say.
That In God We Trust America, Inc.
I at least live in the same state. And while I respect your approach to truth and positivity. I despair at that truth and positivity when a sign behind me suggests that I'm personally responsible for all of society's ills, and I hate God. In fact, I don't. I understand that Congress reaffirmed In God We Trust, I believe it's 112th Congress. I'm actually very familiar with that documentation, but as a county government, perhaps you're familiar that maybe with the idea that maybe sometimes, you know, in dealing with federal appropriations and stuff, that Congress doesn't always get it right. And I think they got it wrong here. I'm familiar with In God We Trust on a historical basis. In God We Trust has always been used to divide, sometimes for good reasons, for the Civil War, perhaps, when it was first put on the money, sometimes for weirder reasons, to divide classes of citizens and non-citizens based upon whether or not they believe in a God. It always divides. If you don't believe me, look at this room. Look at this room. It's a lot of people here. Are there normally people, this many people in this kind of building, in this kind of room for this kind of meeting? I don't think so. Now, like I said, I live in Tacoma, and I may not be a citizen of this county, but for those of you who feel like you'll be a second-class citizen and somehow locked out of the process here in Clark County, would you raise your hand if you feel like you'd be locked down?
More than
while your, while the logo may make them second-class citizens, I might remind you that those second-class citizens do vote.
I got shaky. And then on the way back, I have to say that Milky said, hey, didn't Pierce County already pass this? Like he was going to get something past me. And I'm like, as well I know. It's like, what? Am I automatically, my county passed it, therefore I'm automatically for it? I don't know how that works.
Your testimony is disqualified.
Yeah. Somehow I don't have a point.
I think he did then mumble under his breath, and I didn't hear it that day when I was there, because I was sitting towards the back. But in reviewing the video, he said, "Yeah, that's the real reason you're down here."
So
I didn't catch that either.
Yeah, in reviewing the video, it's, you know, for all of David Medora's, hey, we're here to be positive and happy and everything, I could not even imagine having been seated in the back of the room how much Tom Milky was actually smirking so smugly at anybody who testified.
That seems to be par for the course. I mean, Jim McKeown was basically the same way back in August.
Also, you got to wear an American flag tie.
Yes, he had an American flag tie.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah, I'm kind of considering sending him an In God We Trust tie. Say, hey, if you can't put it on the wall, at least you can put it on yourself.
I love it.
I may still do that. I don't know. But so I did pretty good. I noticed I kind of lost it in the middle. All right, if I'm going to be critical, I was kind of losing it in the middle. Came up there with something really sharp and didn't deliver it the way I wanted to. I guess I do better in front of crowds than I do in front of councils, because I thought I did really good in front of the crowd at the rally
about 2 hours beforehand. You know, what I liked is, and what our listeners can't hear, is that when you addressed everyone there that was in the chamber, you had about 2/3 of folks raise their hand, and it was just a silent hand raise.
Not my idea. Somebody said, I work with the Sierra Club, and this is sometimes what we do, so that people who don't want to speak get a chance to participate. And I thought, hey, that's a great idea. If nobody does it by the time I get up there, I will. And then what I did was tied it to the fact that here are a number of people in this room. Here are a number of people in this room who are clearly politically active and now interested and now paying very close attention to what you're doing. And they all vote. And that, I mean, I think that message was received. Chances are, I don't know that it'll matter, because Mielke, much like McKeown, he has, he's got the district with like 4 people in it. And
he's also got a persistence unlike any other. And they're already talking about, that whenever anything like this goes down, they always just move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So, Robert, you also made a statement actually right before Sam did.
Yeah. Do we have?
I don't think we have Robert's recorded statement, but we do have Robert on the line. So what sort of was your angle on that?
So my angle was how divisive it is, obviously, because that was kind of the theme we have, and that we should actually use the more inclusive e pluribus unum.
Yeah.
And the idea that I was there to represent the silent minority, those who can't show up, and mostly because they're afraid to show up. So that was my angle. There's a lot of people who are afraid to go against the government or to come out as atheists. So that's why I was there.
Yeah, it should be noted that there were a lot of signs that said E Pluribus Unum on it.
Right.
At the conference.
Our rally, that was one of the things that the collaborators in the rally decided would be the best message, because if we're contrasting the division between believers and non-believers, we got to have something to contrast it with. And the state seal, or the, sorry, federal seal, has had E Pluribus Unum on it for ages. And it is a much more inclusive statement. It is also the statement that we had wished been adopted in Pierce County. Only. That
they ended
statement.
Up saying they'd adopt both, which I guess took some of the wind out of their sails, but I don't know what that
a little
was
bit.
About. I have a feeling
there was something else.
What's that?
There was something else that I brought up kind of towards the end of my little speech, is the wording within the proclamation itself was a little different from most of the others. And it's the wording that had it, I can't remember exactly, but it said that the motto was adopted after World War II. And
I thought
that was somewhat dishonest, because it leads people to believe that World War II was the reason it was adopted instead of the real reason.
Yeah.
So,
which is McCarthyism.
I thought that needed to be said. Yeah. It's McCarthyism.
McCarthyism happened after World War II. Bay of Pigs also happened after World War II.
9/11 happened after World War II.
Yeah, and I said, well, this is technically correct, but it's really misleading.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, Bob, you spoke, I spoke, Bob spoke. Bob actually corrected Mador on some of the verbiage in the Declaration of Independence, which he did not approve of. Look, if you're going to correct somebody on the Declaration of Independence, get it right. Because he didn't really. Yeah.
That was
not Bob, the Mador guy.
Yeah, one of our, one of the local coordinator for the Freedom From Religion Foundation had spoken, and then Medora said, is this your understanding? And really dressed her down for misspeaking slightly about the Declaration of Independence and where or whence comes our power, our rights bestowed by our government or by our creator. So he really, in a very condescending way, dressed down this woman that just gave a very eloquent testimony.
And then Bob
tried to go and correct him back.
And Bob, I think, effectively corrected him and said, hey, you know, this is actually where the powers are derived. This is what it says in the Declaration of Independence, even though that's not actually a foundational document for the country. I mean, it's historically interesting, but it's not, you know, and that nettled Medore a little bit.
Yes,
I would say.
It did.
Yeah.
So all of this aside, none of this was really what I thought was the killing blow, was the coup de grace. That was a local guy, and
Mr. Tran.
Yeah, we'll play a minute of this. This is powerful stuff.
I'm a Vietnamese Buddhist. As a Buddhist, I don't have a god. And for all my life, I struggled so hard to participate in this community. You see how many Vietnamese agents like me, this active. You know, they don't have the energy. They don't have they don't dare to fight like I do for the benefit of the citizen, and I do to today. And I come here to testify quite often also. And I always feel like I'm an outsider. And with that motto up there, I feel completely another one more time that I don't count. I'm not one of you here. Because, you know, of course, today I say I'm a Buddhist, Vietnamese Buddhist. So next time I come here with that sign over there, how can my voice could be heard fairly and equally?
It was the most powerful moment of the morning for me. And I think
it was for a lot
so
of people.
Many. You don't hear raucous applause there because everyone was sitting there in stunned humility, actually.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just listening to it, it brings these emotions back up that I felt while I was there.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of brought tears to my eyes because, you know, this guy is living what we're talking about.
Right.
And he is the reason why we want E Pluribus Unum, if we put up a model at all, because we are, you know, one out of many.
Yeah.
Before before that clip, he had described how he had lived in the United States for over 40 years. He had become a naturalized citizen. He was active in the business community. And despite all of those things, despite living out the proverbial American dream, he still had, to this day, felt like an outsider. Now, to me, during his testimony, I'm sitting in the back. And I know you said, Sam, we weren't going negative and we weren't going to talk about the other side.
Go for it.
There were two women behind me that had been carrying anti-abortion signs and In God We Trust signs, and they were sitting there listening to Mr. Tran speak. And as he said, I've been in this country for, you know, 40 years, naturalized citizen. He said, I'm a Vietnamese Buddhist. I have no God. They said, no God? And they were sitting there behind me speaking of this. And then at one point later on in his testimony, you know, how he was reemphasizing that he would feel separate from the rest of the community. One of them turned to the other and said, you've been here 35 years. This is our culture. Either get with it or don't. And that was just one little taste of the representatives of the people that Milky is representing.
Yeah.
Of that he's frankly pandering to.
Yeah.
And it was very, as difficult as it is to listen to Mr. Tran, it's more difficult to hear people insult somebody's humanity and somebody's activism because they are not a Christian.
I stay away from this because if you just go around calling people racists all the time, because that's what this is, you know, they don't listen to you, and it's hard to change policy when they don't listen to you. But man, you pierce the skin at all. You go anything other than skin deep, and this is what you run into. Sometimes not even when you're not even looking. And I, what do you say to that? How do you approach that? Well, I mean, I have an idea how to approach that, but it might have gotten me thrown out of that room if I had heard it. So all of the, after that, there were a couple more comments, mostly from the pro side, and then it all wrapped up, and then the guys, the county commissioners, counselors, correspondents...
They're board members. They're actually, Clark County's in the middle of transitioning from a three-person commission to five-person, but there's still three right now.
So, Milky, the guy who brought this up, actually said a thing, which I thought was really cogent, because I think it just sort of sets the tone and explains why these people are, you know, why the folks who are falling in behind In God We Trust America are doing what they're doing. He spoke much, I'm going to play a selected clip. It's about a minute long. It's edited. You'll know where the edits are. And if you want to hear the whole thing, you can go to the Clark County website and hear it. But I just want to get the juxtaposition of these two of these ideas together so that you can see where these things are.
First of all, I want to be very clear. It was never meant to be a religious symbol, and I don't believe it is. I think it's a national statement as to the history and how our government was formed. This hall right here is a small part of government. We're not trying to establish a religion. That's not what we're doing at all. And we've also heard today that the term God is very generic, but yet there's some that claim that they don't believe in anything at all. The non-believers over through time have removed God from every aspect of our life. And when a little bit comes back, they seem to panic. I was hoping that this would act as a wake-up, just like it did during 9/11. All of a sudden, everybody was together. And we have one nation. We were together. And every time we have a crisis or a shooting in a school, they all turn to some supreme being. And you see it. They'll actually run into the school and have prayer.
The short thing, the idea that 9/11 made us all religious, clearly he wasn't paying attention, because a lot of people see September 11th, 2001 as one of the prime causes of what is often described as the new atheism movement. Two, he's saying this is not a religious symbol. This is a generic symbol, and it stands for everything and everyone, and it's not designed to establish a religion. But anytime anything bad happens, everybody runs to a church. He's saying that it does. It's not a religious symbol, but it's a religious symbol for everybody. That is establishing over. That is a person with authority, a person voted into office, a person whose job it is, on some level, to enforce the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Washington, saying that with my authority, I'm saying to you, who are an atheist, you go to church when somebody is shot. That's right. What you do. And that's why this bothers me. And that's why I fight it. Robert?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. There's a point on that where they're calling it a non-religious symbol. But the courts have ruled it semi-non-religious because they call it ceremonial deism.
Right.
But I have done my research on deism, and it's actually a religion. And they call themselves religious people. Now, they don't have the same dogmas and doctrines as your traditional theistic beliefs, but they are a religion.
To that end, so, if In God We Trust establishes ceremonial deism as a religion, then every fervent Christian that is not merely a deist should be gravely concerned by this. It's not a ruling that really bolsters true freedom of religion, honestly. Anytime you have an infringement of either free speech or an infringement of the separation of government from religious practice and worship, it leads its way to threatening someone's right to worship in their own way. I think, Sam, you've said, as soon as we put In God We Trust, decide which God.
Yeah.
Who's God?
That becomes an open question. Right. And, well, so after all the shouting was done, Medor suggested that instead of In God We Trust, a portion of the Declaration of Independence be put up.
But only the ones that mention Creator, with
right.
a capital C.
And then who was the third?
Gene Stewart.
Gene Stewart said, he motioned it, and then Gene Stewart talked about it and said, hey, you know, I feel like we're moving the goalposts here. This doesn't seem like a good idea. We'd have to talk about this one. And the amendment died. And then at the end of it, Milky proposed it, and it died for want of a second. So Mador kind of changed his mind.
It was very interesting because Mador said, well, in my role as chair, I'm not technically allowed to bring forth motions or second motions.
Except
he had brought forth this one, said, I'm abandoning my post as chair momentarily while I say, why don't we paint the declaration on our wall?
If that's a rule, that's got to be a rule specifically for Clark County, because that's not necessarily, I mean, in a three-person board, one person.
How does that work?
Yeah, it doesn't, is what that means. I know they're moving to a five-person board, but they've had this one for a while, it sounds like.
Well, here's something interesting that I found with his little amendment partial proposal, is that he already had paperwork printed up with these on it to show the other council members.
Yeah.
Huh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because he handed them papers with the saying that he wanted. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Now, there were two 6-minute recesses. There were 2 6-minute recesses before then.
He may have been able to print them up then. I don't necessarily think it was an off-the-cuff kind of thing.
Right. And then finally, we're not done, it sounds like. Becky, you were getting updates.
Yeah, there was a study session the following day on Wednesday when Milky revived it and said, all right, let's get united on this. The fact was, Mador said, look, people say that this is about division. If we cannot be united amongst the three of us, then I guess it is, or something that is dividing. So we're going to take it back for further study, and they took it back. And the next day, they met for their study session, and it continues to be discussed, talked about, reviewed. Stuart is actually proposing an additional one as well. I think that everybody's going to get their posters. And you know what? This actually brings it back a little bit to someone who testified in the public comment session. There was a woman that said, look, I understand and respect that when you want to put "In God We Trust" on the wall, you're trying to exert and exact a behavioral change in people. You want people to be the best they can. Here's my proposal. Put a bulletin board on the wall of this chamber. Invite people to bring a picture of the thing that inspires them to be the best version of themselves that they can be. And during any public comment session, have the wall monitor, she actually called them a wall monitor, the wall monitor, pin that, 5x8 picture up on that bulletin board and explain why that picture inspires them to be the best version of themselves that they can be. And if someone wants to put "In God We Trust" there, that's just fine.
So we're going to have to go back and do it all over again. And we'll be doing this all over again next week. But that's all the time we've got. I'd like to thank CFI, Greater Portland, FFRF Portland, Humanists of Greater Portland, Portland State Secular Student Alliance, American Humanist Association, Greater Northwest, Humanists of Washington, which is me, Becky, and Robert. Robert, thank you very much for being on.
You're really welcome.
Hey, no problem. Yeah. So Robert is president of Humanists of North Puget Sound and a bunch of other things. He might do your wedding if you're getting married, that sort of thing. Catch you guys. We're going to be at the tap room. Catch you guys next week.